ओम अज्ञानतिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः.
No time even to at the end of the Jai Dhvani to say Nama Om Vishnu Pa. Immediately someone begins singing the kirtan because they want to sing. But actually they should let the more senior devotees, so many sannyasis present, but someone will jump in and make sure that they will sing. Whether or not it's pleasing to Krishna, that is something else. It's pleasing to the person who's singing. But that is not our aim and object. Our aim and object is to satisfy Krishna. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, the Sama and the Yajur Vedas. Superficial reading of this verse and purport may lead us to believe that this is supporting the philosophy of monism, that everything is ultimately one. However, there are many other statements in Bhagavad Gita and throughout the Vedic literatures which lead us to believe that this is not so. Particularly, one important verse of Bhagavad Gita teaches us Krishna's unique position. Matapratram nanyat kinchidasti dhananja. That nothing, Krishna says, is equal to me or greater than me. Nothing or nobody. So, how to understand such statements? That everything is one with Krishna. Everything is one with Krishna in the sense that nothing is separate from Krishna. Nothing can be separate from Krishna because everything is manifested from Krishna. Particularly, many examples are given in Bhagavad Gita of Lord Krishna's vibhutis, his expansion as vibhuti. Vibhuti means something which is an exhibition of Krishna's potency. Actually, everything is an exhibition of Krishna's potency, but some things we see as very great, just like if we see a great mountain, we are awestruck, or in the terrific heat of the summer, we are awestruck, or in the very cold, as some places in Russia, they become like minus 50 degrees centigrade in the winter. So we can't even imagine what is that like. Oh, one time I saw in Rajasthan, they'd measured 62 degrees Celsius near Jaisalmer. So these are these manifestations of Krishna's energy. That is for the layman who is not trained in the science of Krishna. He accepts this as something very wonderful, and in this way may be accepted as a representation of God. So that is a beginning in the science of God consciousness. But the last word in the understanding of Krishna consciousness is this, Vedyam. The object of knowledge in the Vedas is Krishna. Vedas, they are meant for giving us specific knowledge. We can gain general knowledge by studying this universe without the help of the Vedas. Just like I think, you're all from Bits, is it? Okay. So going to Bits, of course, people who go to these prestigious universities, they tend to think of themselves as very knowledgeable. But that, of course, is only general knowledge which is gathered through the senses. So scientific knowledge, as it is called, is only that which is gathered through the senses. Therefore, the scientific ideal is that we only believe what we can prove. And proved means what we can ascertain through sensory observation. If I don't see it, I don't believe it. That's the general idea. Of course, there are many things we haven't seen. Just like, has anyone seen subatomic particles? Has anyone seen? No. But we accept that they exist. Actually, this is, according to the Vedic process, these are the methods of knowledge called pratyaksha and anuman. Pratyaksha means that which is established by direct sensory perception, and anuman means based on that sensory perception and logical understanding, we make an educated guess. However, this process is certain to be full of mistakes and defects. People generally think that scientists know the answers. They know so many things. They say science has proved this and science has proved that. But as any real scientist knows, there are so many problems in science. And one of the main problems is that whatever is proved today is liable to be disproved tomorrow. Which means it is not actually proved. Nothing can actually be proved in science because it is based upon the sensory observation, which has the defects, every conditioned soul has the defects. Brahma, Brahma, Vipralipsa, Karana, Patav. which means the tendency to make mistakes, to be an illusion, brahmapramad, vipralipsa, cheating propensity, and karana pratap, imperfect senses. So because we have these defects, we cannot know perfectly what is knowledge. And we see, even though there are many intelligent people in the world, and they have many intelligent philosophies they have dreamed up, but they are devoid of knowledge of the absolute truth. If we ask any scientist to tell us scientifically what is the purpose of life, they cannot even begin to answer, because science doesn't even attempt to answer this most basic of questions. They're so busy trying to find out how everything is going on, but the more important question, why is it going on? That they don't even attempt to ask. They deliberately put the blindfold, or they deliberately close their minds to ask this question, because they have no answer. By science we can study how the grass is growing and so many different things, but what does it help you? At the time of death, of course, they will say that nothing happens after death. Why do they say? What is the evidence? Their only evidence is that we don't know anything else otherwise. We don't have any evidence of life after death. But then you don't have any evidence that it doesn't exist either. It's a mystery to you. So, but they conclude, or many so-called scientists conclude, that simply when the body is finished, everything is finished. But then they can't explain why the body is living in the first place anyway. Why is it? What is it that makes this combination of chemicals walk, talk, have feelings, emotions? If, as atheistic scientists say, the body is simply a combination of chemicals, then why should we be so... Just like, I'll tell you an interesting story. I wanted to get some books from the British Humanist Association, and this is an atheistic society which is dedicated to promoting humanism, with the idea that preaching of religion is very bad, it's spoiling society, and we should have secularism and atheism. So I wanted to buy some of their nonsense books just to see what nonsense ideas they're talking about, so we can preach about it. But they don't sell that book. You have to become a member of their society first. So I didn't, you know, I'm dressed like this, I didn't want to go. So I sent one of my friends who... devotee who has some longer hair, and he had some pants and shirt and all this. So I sent him, and he went to their office, and he found the secretary there very deeply distressed. He said, "Oh, our secretary just died. We're so sorry." "Well, why should you be sorry? The secretary of your society is just another bag of chemicals. So the bag of chemicals went from one state to another. Then why are you sorry? For what are you lamenting? Why should you be sorry? If everything is simply just chemical combination, death means, according to them, simply another chemical change took place. Just like in the laboratory, if you react acid and alkali, you don't start, "Oh, the acid, it doesn't exist anymore. It got converted into salt and water." You know, no one will cry because the chemicals changed. But they're lamenting. Why? Why should they lament? Where's their whole philosophy is undermined by their reactions. Why are they eager even to promote this? If everything's simply chemical interaction, then why should you even promote humanism? Why are they so anxious to promote it? They say, well, it's for the benefit of human society. But what is human society? According to them, it's just an interaction of chemicals. So these are their philosophy. But it doesn't explain. There's so many things it doesn't explain. It doesn't explain what is consciousness. That's the first thing. That if the body is simply an interaction of chemicals, from what comes consciousness? Bring all the chemicals in the world. Bring all the scientists in the world. Bring all the billions of dollars of research grants. Give them 5 years and let them produce one cell. One blade of grass, but if you can't do that, let them produce even one cell. Can they do it? What do you think? They will say, after 50 years. When I was a kid at school, they told me that the cell, it's a very simple organism, and within a few years we'll be reproducing them in the laboratory. We'll be not reproducing them, we'll be creating. Now, after... Huh?
They're not creating the replica of the heart. No, they're not.
They're not taking the raw chemicals. I always say, you take the raw chemicals and do it. That they cannot do. Now they say, well, we made it. they won't say a mistake, but now we further research has shown that the, of course there are so many varieties of cells, but even the most simple cell is extremely complex, and we think maybe after 50 years we may be able to synthesize it in the laboratory. Maybe. These are the kind of words used in science. Maybe, perhaps, theoretically. Once I was on a plane, I saw someone next to me reading some popular science magazine, and it was about life, the origins of life on this planet. So they already came to the conclusion that evolutionary theory, they can't go on with this bluff for much longer. So they had a theory. Of course, this theory is already, it didn't last very long, it's already been discarded and discounted. But there was some theory that life arrived on Earth by meteorites. So they wrote that scientists now postulate that life arrived on Earth by meteorites some 3 million years ago or something like this. So that the first sentence in the whole big long article used the word postulate. And then the rest of the article says, and then this happened, and that happened, and this happened, and the first cells, they reacted like this, and then they, you know, the same old thing, they crawled on the land, and then they grew some legs, and then, you know, the same old bunkum. But such cheating. They said this happened, that happened, this happened, that, all based on some theory which has absolutely no basis, that life arrived on Earth by meteorites. This is cheating. Brahm pramad vipralipsa. They have no actual knowledge, so they make some theory. I told this many times, but you didn't hear it, so I'll tell you again. A few years ago, there was the All India Science Convention at Baroda. So I went there with our book, Life Comes from Life. I met one professor who was speaking there. And I asked him what he was doing. He said, well, I travel throughout the world and I give lectures at symposiums and seminars like this. So he asked me, what am I doing? I said, I'm passing out this book. And he said, well, what's this book about? He said, this book shows that Darwin's theory is nonsense. So I said, he laughed and he said, well, we already know that. So I said, then why are you still teaching it? He said, well, we don't have any other theory, so we have to teach something. Cheating. Cheating. This is called cheating. So, another point I was just discussing with one of my godbrothers, because maybe one thing you know, that I remember at the time in 1975 or 1976, must have been 1976, Prabhupada brought out the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He's translating the books. And it was for the first time he very clearly stated that the moon is further away than the sun, and the sun, the astronauts, they never went to the moon. It was all a hoax. So at that time, devotees were surprised, especially the American devotees, because, you know, it's the Americans went to the moon, so they say. So devotees are a little surprised. Not a little surprised, they're all very surprised. But, of course, Prabhupada said so many surprising things that eventually devotees digested it and went on with life. Now, I was just discussing with one of my godbrothers that in the Western countries, because he's preaching in the West mostly, if we say to people that the so-called astronauts never went to the moon, it was all a hoax, people are much more ready to accept it than in India, because in the West, their faith in science, maybe in the 1950s it was very strong, that they believed that by science we'll have progress and the whole world will become a wonderful place, and we'll learn how to live forever, just like Walt Disney, you know, that he had his body frozen, so that Walt Disney was a great believer in science, so he had his body frozen and put in his will that when you discover how to bring life back to dead bodies, then bring me back to life and then I'll go on making more Mickey Mouse films for the benefit of human society. So, of course, his relatives, they didn't like that, so they made a lawsuit and they defrosted his body and took the money. So poor old Walt, he can't make any more Mickey Mouse films. So, anyway, he was saying that in the West, if you say this, the people there, many people there are willing to listen, because that faith in science, that science will solve all our problems, long ago got dissolved. Just like if we put Walt's dead body in a strong acid mixture, then it will get dissolved. So in the same way, people's faith in science long got dissolved, because they say we're going to solve the problems of the world. But what is the actual benefit? You see, there's so much pollution. That's one major problem in the world. They say that, you know, it's like they're going on day by day polluting the world more and more. The seas are all polluted and the ozone layer is depleting and so many different things. And the food you eat, it's full of all kinds of chemicals. The air you breathe is full of chemicals, and they don't even know what it does to you. It's like after 20 years they're using some food, some antioxidant or preservative or something like that. And after 20, they test it on rats or rabbits, and they say it's okay, it didn't make the rats too sick, so you'll put it in your Coca-Cola or your Limca. And then they find after 20 years it's carcinogenic and so many people are dying from it. So they say, well, sorry, we'll find out some other preservative. Or you have things like your Bhopal gas leak, or so many drugs they use. They're just like when I was a kid, they had this thalidomide drug. It was one of the first contraceptives, and they tested it and said it was good, but then they found so many children being born with no legs and no hands. So there's so many mistakes, and the whole society is full of so much distress in so many ways, that people in the West, the dream of science bringing in a new utopia long ago went. But in India, if we say, he was telling them, that in India, if we say they never went to the moon, it was all a hoax, and people get very upset because they believe in science. Just like when the last prime minister came, and he made a stand, Nehruistic stand, that we believe in. I'm not a sentimentalist. Or in Tamil Nadu, that rascal came in again. So he deliberately found out from astronomy. Usually the new chief ministers, they get sworn in, they find an astrologically auspicious time. But he deliberately found out an astrologically inauspicious time, just to show that he doesn't believe in astrology. So in this way, people in India, they want to... There's so much faith in science. It's like Indian people, they have that natural tendency to believe in something, to follow something, to have some framework of reference. People previously in India, people would live according to Shastra. That if it's stated in Shastra, they would follow that. Just like here in the Gita, we see again and again, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. It is written, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. That is authoritative, because Krishna is speaking. He is Bhagavan. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is considered authoritative. But nowadays, we have so many Bhagavans in India. There's, you know, some guy sitting in the LIC office, and all of a sudden he thinks he's Bhagawan, and you know, and then he jumps out and becomes Kalki Avatar. And so people don't have faith. When they say Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, they don't have faith in it anymore. But if you say the scientist has said, according to scientists, Sri Scientist Uvacha, then must be true. But where is the truth? Because they're simply accumulating what they think is knowledge. But it's not actually knowledge in the sense of the Vedic literature. Here it said vidyam, vidyam, vidya. In the Vedic literature, when it's spoken about, when the word vidya is used, that specifically means adhyatmic vidya. Knowledge of this material world, that's also required as long as we're living in this material world. But it's not the most important thing. Even if there was none of the so-called modern science, even previously people were living without it. They had food, shelter, water, clothing, everything. And there's a propaganda put out that previously people were very ignorant and foolish because they didn't have motor cars and CDs and all these things. But look at the literature that was produced. Look at the philosophy. You see, Vyasadeva, he was simply living in a cottage in the Himalayas. And look, this philosophy. Nowadays, you see this kind of philosophy, people, they have a brain maybe to understand subatomic physics or something like this. But the fine intelligence to even think what is the purpose of life, people are not even thinking what is the purpose of life. That is why in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, describing the demons, alpa buddhiyaha. They have small intelligence. And why is that? You may say, well, I'm PhD in physics, engineering, technology. Why small intelligence? Certainly good intelligence is there. to make spacecraft or even to make this requires so much intelligence. We look at this, we just a normal thing, we see it every day, but it requires so much intelligence went into designing this and producing it. So intelligence is there, but the real purpose of intelligence, they have lost that. They don't even think. We find so-called intelligent people, they go through their whole lives without even thinking what is the purpose of life and what happens after death and why am I suffering, which is the really important question. One devotee was telling me, because he's doing business real estate in America, so he was telling me that some of the people he works with, they're lawyers, they're big, you know, that means they have to have a good brain to be able to study so much and accumulate so much information. You have to know how to interpret the law and apply it. And you have to be sharp, especially in court hearings. You have to be very sharp to say the right thing at the right time to make the case. So he found that these people, they were very intelligent in that sense. But when they spoke with each other, what they were talking about, he said mostly they talk about football, beer, and sex. This is what they're talking about. And these are the intelligent, so-called cultured people. Because they don't have any, they have not been trained to cultivate a higher purpose of life. Therefore, even though people, they're intelligent in one sense, but they are considered, according to Vedic understanding, they're considered, the majority of people in the modern age, they're considered Shudras. Even this big intelligent scientist, they're considered Shudras. Now, Shudra, of course, that's generally considered in India to be a caste that gets all the jobs nowadays, because caste Brahmins, they're bad. Only the Shudras should get jobs. To lift them up, that is the idea. Uplift the lower castes. But really, Shudra means Shochati iti Shudra, one who laments. In Gita, Lord Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na Shochati na Kankshati. A person on the transcendental platform, he is always happy because he neither laments nor does he desire anything. But a person without spiritual knowledge, he's always lamenting for that which he couldn't get or that which he lost, and he's desiring, so many desires. It's also described in Gita that the demoniac people, they have unlimited material desires. So a person who is cultivating material desires, he's a Shudra. It means he's ignorant, he has no spiritual knowledge. An intelligent person should decrease his material desires and overcome his material desires, knowing that even if trying to fulfill material desires is in itself the source of all unhappiness. If you think, I must enjoy this and that, you have to make so much endeavor. If you want to live in a nice house and have a wife and all these, so much endeavor must be there. One devotee was telling me that he inherited some money. He was also in America, so he inherited some money. So he told his wife, okay, so let's stop working now, and with this money, we'll buy a small house close to the temple, and we'll go on, we'll just serve Krishna. We don't have to do anything else. She said, no, I want to get a big house. And he said, okay, you work for it. She wants. So they could have lived very simply and served Krishna. No, big house. A big house means big headache, and you have to go on working, working, working. So people have so many material desires, and the modern society is promoting have more desires. A sensible person should try to decrease his material desires, knowing that they are the cause of suffering. But the modern society, buy this, buy that. They're always pushing you to buy so many things you don't need. Just like this cosmetics and fashions and VCR, TV, so many different things you don't need. But you have to work. The whole modern society is based on production. Everyone should work in factories, produce more and more goods, and everyone else should buy them. And in this way, the production is increased and someone at the top is getting filthy rich. And in the meantime, everyone is working like an ass. So this amassing knowledge on the material platform, that's not actually knowledge. That is not actually intelligence, because you're simply using your brain in the wrong way to find. Actually, this whole modern educational system is simply a fraud. It's simply cheating. They give you the idea, you will be respected in society. You will get a good job. What does a good job mean? You work like 80 hours a week, and earn 12,000 rupees a month, or you go to America and work like an ass there, and you earn so much money. But what are you going to do with so much money? You don't have enough time to think what to do with it. I know one person was telling me, he worked so hard to get his medical degree, like 9 years or something, and now he's working literally 80 hours a week, and he earns a lot of money. But what's he going to do with the money? He only has time to eat, sleep, and pass stool and work. That's all he can do. And even the ass gets time to graze sometime and run around in the field. But he doesn't even get time for that. No relaxation. So what will he get? He'll get a nervous breakdown. That's all. That will be his wages. So the modern society, Prabhupada said that, the modern leaders will force you to work like hogs and dogs and asses. And they're telling you, this is very good. You will be prestigious. You will get a good job. Well, there's no such thing as a good job. Job means it's miserable. Job means, why will anyone work? Only for money. If it's such a good job, then why don't they pay you nothing? Oh, I got a good job, a technologist in a factory. Okay, it's such a good, why is everyone eager to get it? Such a good job, okay. This job is so good that we're not going to pay you anything. You can just come and do it voluntarily. No one will come. Good job means the main thing is you get a lot of money. But you have to work in horrible conditions, mostly in the factories and technical plants. You're getting poisoned all the time by breathing in so many things. And there's no fresh air to breathe. So it's all a fraud. This whole education system is simply cheating you and diverting your intelligence to work for someone else. It's like good job. You get 20,000 rupees a month. And your work, the person who's employing you, earns 2 lakhs from your work. And you're thinking, I'm doing very well. But really good, real use of intelligence means to understand Vidyam. Vedeshya sarveraham eva vedyaha. To understand Krishna. That is the real use of intelligence. To think, what is the purpose of life? Who is God? What is our relationship with Him? To ask this question, what happens when we die? Why aren't we asking this question? Why are we simply thinking, what shall I do now? We have to die. Even in this life we have to suffer so many miseries. What is the purpose of life? Without asking that question and seeking the answer to it, we are not intelligent at all. We're simply in a great illusion. So to get the answer, we have to come to the Vedic literatures. Especially we have to come to this Bhagavad Gita as it is. We have to get the answer from the acharyas, the self-realized souls, who have understood the conclusion of all the scriptures. Even if we come to the scriptures, there may be so many people saying so many different things. We have to come to the proper conclusion. Vedaischa sarve aham eva vedyaha, Krishna says. I am the object of all the Vedas. And this is scientific. Prabhupada would always say, this is Krishna consciousness is scientific in the true sense of the term. Science means that you should be able to demonstrate it. We're not against science per se. Just like, alright, you say, mix salt and mix acid and alkali, react it and you get salt and water. Okay, show it. Alright, mix it and do it. And we'll see it. Okay. But then when you say that man has descended from monkeys, and we ask you, show it, then you can't do it. So that's not science. That's simply gross speculation. We never saw any. There are millions of monkeys in the world. I'm sure at bits there are plenty of monkeys roaming around, isn't it? Isn't it? There are plenty of monkeys there? So did you ever see any of them give birth to men? Baby? I was just in Russia, so I had a little joke there. That, you know, in Russia, they're named after their father, like in Tamil Nadu, same thing. So you'll have someone like, his name will be Ivan Sergeyevich, means Ivan the son of Sergei, or Sergei Ivanovich, something like this. So I was saying that, according to their theory, if your grandfather's grandfather, if you go back far enough, you'll get Ivan Monkeyevich. Is it very likely? So this is not science. It's simply a bluff to try to avoid the actual fact that it's in another example. How many times have I given this? Let's give it again. Okay. All right. You see this? It's a very simple container. It came into being by chance. One day, I was just sitting in a field, and there was a minor explosion, and this was the... Don't laugh. Why not? If I sat in the field long enough, surely it would happen. You know, by chance, anything's possible. No one can believe it. You see this? It's extremely simple design. Let us compare this to, you can't even compare it to the simplest cell in our bodies. It's so simple. But to make this, how much intelligence, and someone had to, first of all, they had to take the iron ore out of the mine. That means they had to find it by geological methods. Then they had to find out what's the best way to extract it. And there's so many considerations. Is it financially, is it economically viable? And there's so many, you have to get a legal permit and you have to purchase the rights and so many different things just to get the iron out. And then the process to convert the, take the iron ore out from the, to separate it and purify it. And then how to mix it with carbon to make steel. And there are so many different kinds of steel according to the, and the design for this so that it fits just nicely, not too tight, not too loose. You could write an encyclopedia just about this. How much intelligence and endeavor went into making this. And it's such a simple thing. And the universe is so incredibly complex that we can't even begin. Science means it's just made a very, very tiny beginning to try to understand it. And even that is full of so many doubts. Even the most ordinary things, we don't know. Some years ago I met a neurosurgeon, and his job is to cut people's heads open and operate on them. And he told me that we know maybe 2% of what's going on in the brain. We don't really, he said, we're not even sure how the brain works at all. And that's only the brain, and then what to speak of the whole universe. And it's so complex. And how can you say it comes into being by chance? It is a most ludicrous idea. If I tried to make some campaign that this came into being by chance, and I went and I tried to write to the newspaper, what would happen to me? I'd get put in an insane asylum, isn't it? If I wrote articles and sent to New Scientist and all, I'd get put in, and I'd get committed to the insane asylum. And how much more insane are these people who say the whole universe is coming to being by chance? So sanity begins with understanding. Pita aham asya jagata, the father of this universe is Krishna. Or at least accepting that there must be a creator. Who is that creator? That you'll have to find out from the Vedic literature. But to say that everything has come into being by chance is just educated insanity. It means someone may say, sometimes you find insane people, they're actually very intelligent, but they're insane. They may have so much good intelligence, but it can't be directed properly because they're not in control of their thoughts, of the direction of their thoughts. So practically the whole world is going on under these insane theories that there's no meaning to life, everything is simply produced from chemicals, everything is coming to being by chance. And the result of insanity is what? More insanity. And we see the whole modern society, it's insane. I was just discussing with one devotee. I was telling him that, when I was in England just recently, I saw that some football player got transferred from one club to another for £4.5 million. That's, I don't know, more money. It's more than my tiny brain can work out on the spot without a calculator in rupees. That's about, that's £4.5 million it's more like 55. Okay, work it out quick. Come on. Bits. Scientists. Anyway, it's a lot of money. Few crores. So he told me, well, that's nothing. In the meantime, someone else got transferred for £15 million. For what? For kicking a piece of leather with some air in it around. This is modern society. Like this, you see, so much technology they use to show sports games from one side of the world to the other. And cartoons. This is insanity. People, they're deluded. People are deluged with insanity. When you go to school, even before that, you watch TV, then you go to school, and you get this worldview that's simply work, get money and enjoy. And the whole society is like a fever, everyone. Right, you see now there's so many new trains in India, and they're all completely packed. I'm most of the time in Gujarat, and you find the trains from Gujarat to Bombay, there's like more than 20 trains a day, and they're all completely packed with people going up and down, buying something in Gujarat, selling it in Bombay, buying something else, coming on the train, completely just running up and down here and there. And all the planes, businessmen going here and there, some conference, just running. What for? And that they don't get more money. This is the goal. You see India today, this typifies the whole idea of modern society. Get money, be prestigious, enjoy life. But what for? That they have no idea. And if are they enjoying? That they also don't have time to think. They presume I must be enjoying because since I was a child I was programmed to believe that you should be happy like this. So and inside, they, you know, they don't have time to think, but it's like, you know, they're miserable inside, but you can't show it. Everyone has to show they're very happy. That's, you have to smile and you know, you have to show you're a success and all this. But inside, people, they're frustrated like anything. And that's why you see on the, just like on the campuses, especially the prestigious campuses in India, there's all this pressure on the students, be a success, pass your exams, and so many of them are killing themselves. Because the, why? They're from good families, they're getting good results, they've got a great future in front of them, and all of a sudden, boom. So it's why? Why? Good question. Why don't you ask why before the next one does it? Because your whole society is driving people insane. Because they're pushing you towards a goal which is neither, it doesn't give you any happiness while you're trying to attain it, and when you do attain it, you're not happy then. It simply covers your real knowledge. So Krishna Consciousness Movement is meant for giving a completely different direction to society, totally misguided modern society. Modern society, everyone is running fast, but where are they running to? They have no idea. We know they're running 100 miles an hour in the wrong direction. They're running as fast as they can to hell. So Krishna Consciousness Movement is meant to give proper knowledge to human society. That first thing, you're not this body anyway, so why are you trying to enjoy it? You're a spirit soul. You're meant for enjoyment. We're not denying enjoyment. We're not saying you go and sit in the Himalayas and just wear a loincloth and starve yourself to death. We don't say that. You're meant for enjoyment. Anandamayo bhyasa. But what is enjoyment? Enjoyment is not by the body. If you think that sex is the highest enjoyment, then you should become a pig or a dog, because they can do. They don't have to go through all this business of getting a degree, getting money, and then only you can get married. Then only you can enjoy. And they don't have any. They don't have to get a PhD or any marriage ceremony. Simply, we hear all the time, dogs wedding. That's called in Russian. In your language also, no. I mean, all the dogs are barking on the street. That's called dog's wedding. Why? Because they're all barking after the kutti. So, if you want to enjoy, they're doing it. That's their wedding ceremony. So how can people be happy living like this? People are suffering. Therefore, we are... endeavor of the Krishna Conscious Movement is to give this knowledge to human society. The whole mistake is because they have no knowledge. Simple thing to understand. We're not this body. Body is temporary, but the soul is eternal. And our real happiness is on the platform of Atma Sukh. It means in relationship to Krishna. It's a very simple thing to understand. But because we are full of so many doubts, we've been programmed from childhood to think in a completely materialistic way. And to think that real knowledge is only that which comes from the senses, whereas the opposite is true. We cannot understand. Our senses are imperfect. So to wake people up from this insanity may take some time, but it is the purpose of the Krishna Conscious Movement. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? Prabhupada said that. Yeah, it's a long way to go, but we've come a long way also. Krishna Conscious Movement is spreading more and more. Yeah, what are you saying?
Is it possible in Kali Yuga that everyone will become Purusha consciousness?
By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, anything is possible. But there are some hardcore demons who are very determined not to become Krishna conscious. Matiya nakrishne paratasvatova mitopi padyeta grihavratanam adanta gopya vishatanta misram punapunas charvita charvananam. Now some people have made a very strong vow that I shall not become Krishna conscious under any circumstances. I'll enjoy my senses and go to hell. That Prabhupada said that is the meaning of a demon. Under any circumstances, he is determined he will not become Krishna conscious. He will go to hell, he will suffer in so many ways, but he is determined that under no circumstances will I surrender to Krishna. But we have a process for such people also. It's called Harinam Sankirtan. That when we go out and chant in public, that sometimes we find, I hardly saw in India, but sometimes in the Western countries, people, they hear and immediately block their ears and run away, but already the sound entered their ear and it will purify them. Whether they like it or not, they're becoming purified. But there are many people who, even prasadam, they refuse. They don't want to take it because they know that, you know, if according to them there's no such thing as God, there's no such thing as transcendental, then what does it matter if we take their food, if they take our food? But they won't take because, you know, there's something funny in that. They're afraid. They think there's, I don't know what they think, but they're intelligent enough demons to know that if I take this food that I might stop being a demon, so I better not take it.
In Shaktiyuga, everyone is Krishna conscious. In Shaktiyuga, everyone worship God Krishna.
Rather than everybody worship Krishna, even in
Shaktiyuga? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone was Paramahamsa. There were no orders. There was no Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Everyone means there was. That's general. There were some exceptions. Hiranyakashipu was also there in Satya Yuga.
Why? Those people want to try the Kali Yuga when everybody is Paramahamsa in Satya Yuga.
Yeah, in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, it's stated that the demigods in the heavenly planets are praying for the opportunity to take birth in Kali Yuga, because the process of God realization is so easy in this age and so nice. Whereas they're stuck up in the heavenly planets and they have all this enjoyment and they have the mentality to enjoy. And sometimes they look down and say, we're enjoying this, but this enjoying is simply the cause of our suffering. Better we could be born on earth in the Kali Yuga and chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. That's why Prabhupada said that the demigods are queuing up to take birth in this movement. Could you speak a little louder, please?
Material attachments are the source of misery.
Yeah.
But sometimes even we may be spiritually attached to something, or we may feel that.
No, spiritual attachment is required. We want to be attached to Krishna.